Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
It is being called a first-of-its-kind experiment. Early next year, most drugs will be decriminalized in Oregon, thanks to the voter approval of Measure 110 this past November. But the new law won't cover everyone, everywhere. Coin digital reporter Hannah Ray Lambert is here to explain the differences between state and tribal law and break down the balancing act when it comes to enforcement and prosecution. It is Wednesday, November 25th. I'm Ian Costello, and this is Beyond the Headlines on the Coin Podcast Network. Hannah Ray, for those who may not know or who may have forgotten, who enforces law on tribal lands?
So, of course, it's really complicated and varies by reservation, but reservations in Oregon typically have their own tribal police department, which functions largely like a city police department that we would be familiar with. They can also work with county sheriff's offices, or they can even contract with sheriff's offices for police services. One example in Oregon is the Siletz Reservation. They contract with Lincoln County Sheriff's deputies for law enforcement services. So it kind of depends. But if you get pulled over by police on tribal lands in Oregon, it's probably going to be their own tribal police or a county sheriff's deputy.
And then who writes the law for tribal lands?
So tribal lands often have a tribal council that writes and enacts laws that apply on their lands only. They also have a tribal court and prosecution system that is similar to what we see in the rest of the state.
So if I were driving from here to Bend and I drove through government camp, once I crossed onto the Warm Springs Reservation, I would be subjected to different rules, regulations, and laws than I was just a few miles up the road.
Exactly. I think this is something a lot of us in Oregon don't really think about. But yes, on the Warm Springs Reservation, Tribal Police Chief Bill Elliott says the Tribal Council strives to have continuity with state laws, but you can't always count on that being the case in every single reservation, or even with all laws on the Warm Springs Reservation.
This becomes especially relevant with the recent passage of Measure 110. Hannah Ray, can you give me a Cliff's Notes version of what voters approved with Measure 110?
Sure. Here in Oregon, we are the first state to basically decriminalize possession of all drugs. When it takes effect on February 1st, if you have possession, you can only be fined up to $100, or you can waive that fine by going into treatment, getting a health assessment done. And Measure 110 also provides funding for those treatment centers, taking it from the marijuana tax revenue. A first of its kind law, and the nation is basically watching Oregon right now to see how that plays out here.
But it does not apply to tribal lands.
No. And that's kind of what led me to this story was the day after the election, Warm Springs Police Chief Bill Elliott put out a press release basically reminding people, hey, we're not going to be observing Measure 110 on the Warm Springs Reservation.
We want to make sure that people, when they come and visit the reservation, whether they go to the casino, whether they just are visiting friends or doing a tourist type thing, we just want to make sure that they don't inadvertently bring with them 2 grams of cocaine, because on the reservation, that would be an enforceable act.
So if you're visiting, don't bring drugs because you could be arrested for that.
We'll talk a little bit more about your conversation with Chief Elliott in a minute. For your work on this story, you had a chance to talk to Christopher Carey to get a little perspective about the differences between state law and tribal law and how enforcement could be different. What were some of your key takeaways from that conversation?
So that was a really interesting conversation. Christopher Carey is an associate professor in criminology and criminal justice at Portland State University. One of my main takeaways right off the bat was just how complicated this issue is and how there's no speaking in absolutes when it comes to tribal law versus state law versus federal law. Every jurisdiction is a little bit different. But in terms of the history of tribal sovereignty and how enforcement can vary, it shouldn't surprise anyone that it's an extremely long and complicated history when it comes to tribal sovereignty.
Generally, the Supreme Court has declared that tribes are sovereign entities. So the first thing that a sovereign entity does at a very base level is have self-governing. Along with that, that generally reserves jurisdiction to enact laws, pass laws, prosecute laws, whether state or criminal.
There have been several federal laws limiting that over the years, including one that he brought up was the Major Crimes Act in the late 1800s. And what that did was make it so certain crimes like homicide or manslaughter would be handled by the federal government no matter what. And that has been expanded over the years to include things like mail fraud or human trafficking, stuff like that. And then in the 1950s, Public Law 280 was adopted, making it so several states, including Oregon, would effectively share jurisdiction over tribal lands. Then in the late 60s, Congress passed the Indian Civil Rights Act, which basically makes it so tribes have to observe many of what we consider constitutional rights. So like freedom of speech, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, right to a trial, etc. So those are basically laying the groundwork for all of this competing jurisdiction.
You know, that even becomes more complicated because it would be easy to say, well, they're not subjugated to state law in this case at all, but that's not the case. So what that shakes down to basically is that the three entities that I mentioned share concurrent jurisdiction between tribal and the feds, and everybody else shares jurisdiction with the state or the local sheriffs and their tribal laws if they have them.
On tribal lands, who's likely to prosecute you?
And that's another complicated question.
So if you're on a reservation and the offender is a non-Indian, generally tribal courts have traditionally not had any jurisdiction over that individual.
So if I break a law on tribal lands, it's usually going to be the state of Oregon or the federal government that would be tasked with prosecuting me because I'm not a tribal member. If you're a tribal member, it's probably going to be the tribal court. Different sets of laws for different people. When it comes to drugs like cocaine or heroin that have been legalized in Oregon, this would probably be tribal police because the state of Oregon, in adopting Measure 110, has basically said they're not going to prosecute those crimes. Federal prosecutors are also unlikely to take up those cases because they've largely respected Oregon and other states' rights to decriminalize certain drugs like marijuana. So it would probably be tribal courts in this case.
When it comes to the drugs like cocaine or heroin that have just been decriminalized in Oregon, what's going to happen if you or I or anybody else crosses onto tribal lands in possession and gets caught?
From my conversation with Christopher Carey of PSU, his takeaway was that there is a lot of gray area here. You could certainly be arrested by tribal police and maybe prosecuted by the tribal court.
You know, if tribal law still says you can't bring cocaine onto the reservation or onto the property, then you can't do it regardless of what state law says.
The part that gets fuzzy is because there are so many competing jurisdictions, they could also refer the drug charges to the federal government for federal prosecution.
Every drug crime in the country, regardless of state law and where it occurs, could be prosecuted by the feds. If you get pulled over or you get arrested for drugs, what will happen is that the local authorities will write up a police report and that gets submitted to the U.S. Attorney's Office. And then they either issue, you know, a felony, misdemeanor, or a violation, or they decline to prosecute those cases.
And one of the things he brought up that I think we sometimes forget about here in Oregon is that marijuana is still federally illegal. Even though it's legal in Oregon, if the federal government wanted to, they could grab you off the street for having a joint and prosecute you for it. And there wouldn't really be anything you could do. But they don't do that partly because they have limited resources and for the most part have respected individual states' rights to legalize certain drugs. So as it pertains to Measure 110, Perry doesn't think the federal government would change their stance. So if you're going to be prosecuted, it would probably be a tribal court.
The best advice would be don't bring drugs onto another sovereign entity. You know, you could be subject to prosecution in these places. And we're still figuring that part out. There's a lot of gray area anyway, and this makes it grayer. You don't have absolute protection anywhere. You know, if you are on a reservation in the state, I would not count on the state law to protect you in that area. I think you could be subject to prosecution.
Let's go back and talk a little bit and kind of back to where we started and your conversation with Warm Springs Chief Bill Elliott. You mentioned this potential problem with enforcement between non-tribal members and tribal members. What did he see as the potential pitfalls with the new law there? And how is a department like his on tribal lands planning to handle this?
So his main concern boils down to the basic idea of fairness. If you have a tribal member and a non-tribal member who are in the same car and they have cocaine or something,
how fair is it to arrest the tribal member and then the other person walk free? That's not right.
There have been a lot of issues with this where you essentially have two different classes of people subject to different laws. So from his perspective, and he said it was kind of the tribal council's perspective as well, is that they want to keep their laws as close to state laws as possible so that you don't run into these unfair situations.
In listening to that interview you did with Chief Elliott, the two of you went well beyond discussing just the differences between state and tribal lands when it comes to the enforcement of Measure 110. And you can clearly hear his concern about problem drug use among Native Americans.
Drug and alcohol use seem to affect Native Americans at a much higher rate proportionate to their population, and that's according to health data from the Oregon Health Authority. It's hard to get tribe-specific data, but Chief Elliott says Warm Springs is not an exception to this.
It is a problem. I won't lie to you. It is a problem. Over this last year, we've had 27 drug arrests, but we've also had 220-plus medical priority calls involving drug overdoses on the reservation, which for a population of our size is significant.
He doesn't want to see that problem exacerbated.
Does Chief Elliott have some concerns about how Measure 110 could lead to additional drug issues on tribal lands?
To some extent, he did seem pretty confident that they're kind of, well, I don't want to say isolated, but kind of protected from outside problems. But he definitely doesn't want to see importation of drugs onto the reservation after Measure 110 passes.
People that have a propensity to turn to drugs are going to turn to drugs. That's why we're going to want to make sure that there's not an introduction of drugs onto the reservation.
One of the things he mentioned that we've heard a lot about from non-tribal members too is a potential increase in other crimes like burglary or assaults. He pointed out that, you know, it's not like legalizing marijuana. You're talking about meth and other hard drugs that he said, from a police perspective, often go hand in hand with more violent crimes like domestic violence or child abuse and neglect. He really doesn't want to see any of those problems brought onto the reservation.
What we don't want is we don't want an importation of problems onto the reservation. We don't want people importing drugs or importing anything else that would affect either the kids or people that might have abuse problems. We'd rather these people seek out help, which is available to them on the reservation. The people that don't self-seek help all of a sudden start preying on the other people in regards to traffic accidents, burglaries, assaults, things like that. Having possession of meth, you're talking about domestic violence, you're talking about child abuse, you're talking a lot of different things. Now, when you talk about marijuana, of course, you know, I don't care.
And he acknowledged that this is a really hard time in general for people suffering from addiction, and he doesn't expect those issues to get better on their own anyway. You're talking about a lot of job loss right now due to the pandemic, just the effects of the pandemic itself and people being more isolated.
Things have been hard. Things are going to stay hard for a while when you're talking about pandemic because of loss of jobs, because of, you know, kind of a sense of despair.
For him, this is kind of a perfect storm right now.
When he talks about things like the tribal council trying to have laws that are very similar from tribal lands to state lands, did you feel in any way that there would be a move to decriminalize some of these drugs on tribal lands to kind of level out the difference in the laws?
Not yet, but I think that's definitely an area to continue to watch. It does come down to that level playing field issue. So I think that's something we could definitely keep our eye on in the future. And it might, to some extent, depend on how this plays out in Oregon. I mean, at this point, reservations are kind of like a test within a test. They can watch the rest of the state and see how that goes before they decide if their own tribal councils want to adopt similar measures.
Measure 110 will go into effect in Oregon on February 1st, 2021. That does it for us today. Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. We will talk to you soon.
Coming soon on the COIN Podcast Network.
There's one story that haunts me.
Ken Martin was 54 years old, and then there was Barbara Martin, who was 48. The oldest was Barbie, followed by Virginia, and then Susan, who was 10.
A father, mother, and three daughters have vanished.
The primary theory at the time was that it was an accident. Both girls had holes in their skulls.
When we find the car in the Columbia River, we will find the Martin family and we will solve this case.
Keep an ear out for that story coming soon and check out more great Coin Podcast Network presentations on coin.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.